on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an interview recorded at Pier 45 in San Francisco. If you go there this weekend, you can catch the SS Jeremiah O'Brien in all of its glorious steam power. It's a steaming weekend, and they'll light that puppy up. We're going to hear about that a little later on, but we continue now with 89-year-old Hal Mulnix of Modesto, California, originally from Aurora, Colorado. And during World War II, he was a cook aboard the USS Sturgeon, a salmon-class submarine. If you hear a little noise or the occasional seagull in the background, that's because we talked right out in the open in Fisherman's Wharf right after he had toured the USS Pampanito. If you tour that museum boat, you'll see how big, or maybe I should say how small, that submarine galley is. And what about the selection? What did you have to work with as a cook to try to keep these hungry submariners satisfied?
At the beginning of most of the patrols, we were really in good shape, but towards the end of some of the patrols, we had to improvise with special canned foods, and if there were any meat that we had to take aboard when we started the patrol, we were trimming maybe half to three quarters of an inch of the meat off, say, like a big piece of beef or something, because it had dried up, molded enough, you know, to where you had to trim it down to where you could get rid of it. So that, and by the time the end of the patrols were, we were improvising on what we had left of food. Most of it was canned type of food. There was very little fresh food and fresh vegetables or anything like that that we had when we were on the patrol. And that depended on, of course, on the length of the patrol also, because some of the patrols were pretty long.
How did you deal with complaints from the crew about what you were putting on that plate?
You know, I don't really remember that as such, but the guys knew that whatever they were eating, the cooks were eating also. So I really didn't have a problem. And the officers were always the same way. They ate whatever we had. And I don't remember any complaints really from the crew at all, the officers or men. But then, like I say, it's been a long time since I thought about this. But
what if general quarters sounded? I imagine the galley was not your duty station.
Depended on that. It was, if I was on watch on the galley, I stayed there, and others took the other one. But if I was not on watch, then my duty station, if we were submerged, would be on the bow planes. No matter where I was on the boat, that's where I would go. Yeah, because there was, you know, different things you were doing. If you were on, like you were on watch in the galley, well, that's where you stayed to take care of things, and someone else would have that the duty station to go to and take the bow or stern planes.
Did it take you some time to adjust to sleeping on a submarine, or was that something that just came naturally?
You know, I don't remember having a problem to sleep when I was not on watch. I read a lot. I'd rig a lamp in my bunk and hang my blanket or something so it would close off the light for the other guys that need to be sleeping, and I'd read a lot sometimes in the bunk and then go to sleep. So I don't remember having a problem sleeping.
You just went on a World War II submarine again today, Pier 45 in San Francisco. How much different did it feel, and was it a little harder to move around on a submarine at age 89 compared to age 19?
Well, at age 19, I went just slipped them right through there. But today, I had to work my work my way through there and get my. Sometimes my legs would have a little trouble getting through the hatch, but after two or three, I kind of remembered what I was supposed to be doing, so it was better.
What was that like to be back on a World War II submarine 70 years after you were doing it for real?
Well, it was kind of nice to get back and see what it was like, but the configuration in the compartments seemed to be quite a bit different than what I remember on the Sturgeon. But then the Pampanito is a newer boat, and there may have been other things that were in the boat or arranged differently. So I felt like I wasn't claustrophobic, but it felt like there was more crowded within the different compartments than what I remembered when I was aboard the Sturgeon.
And you mentioned the patrols the Sturgeon made while you were aboard. What can you tell us about those? Where were you, and what was it that you guys were supposed to be doing?
Well, it was a search and destroy. We didn't have any special assignments like sending troops or somebody on board onto an island where they were doing something special, but we did pick up three flyers toward the end of the war when these flyers were doing the bombing raids over Japan, and they'd get shot down. The targets by that time were getting few and far between, so the boats also were put in picket duty that would be in certain areas where the pilots might be expected to be in that general area. So that's once they would get the information why they would pick them up. So we picked up three pilots on the last patrol that we were on, but that was prior to board. We went to the just off of Tokyo Bay, and that's where we sunk the ships that were coming out of bay as a convoy, and that's when they made the 189 attempts to sink us.
Paint a picture for us if you can. Help us understand what that would have been like on the ship, on the boat, I should say, when you guys sunk an enemy ship. Is this something that an announcement is made, word spreads, everyone gets excited, or how would that play out aboard the boat?
I don't think there was excitement so much as, I don't know, maybe just the confidence or whatever that we did manage to sink a target, and that was just one less that they had to worry about. A lot of times we would get in an area, though, after sinking a ship there, where we'd have to run silent, so everything that would possibly generate sound would be turned off, like the fans in the compartments, and like in the galley, we had to be very careful, and if we were going to have anything that we had to sit down to make any noise or something, we had to either just take care of it or hold it or put it down and very softly so that it wouldn't echo and go to the people who were searching for us. But I honestly don't remember anybody being happy that we've sunk somebody.
Well, you said earlier that you don't remember feeling fear, but when you're running silent like that and you can't even clank a fork on a plate in the galley, how can you not be afraid? I think, you know, that would scare the torpedoes out of me.
Well, yeah, I probably was afraid, and I probably had fear, but like I say, I've been away from that for so long, and my memory is really not all that great with a lot of things anymore, so I can't say I wasn't afraid. I just don't remember being afraid.
Was that for any particular reason? Were you just young and fearless? Was it because of confidence you had in your crewmates? Was it faith? How would you size up that fearlessness or confidence that you had?
Well, I think probably it was an idea that we were all in the same boat, and if I was going to get it, then the other guys were going to too. But as to displaying any kind of fear, I really don't remember anybody on the boat that I can remember that actually expressed or seemed to display fear. And I don't know whether it's the fact that we made different patrols and different approaches, and nothing major happened to the boat.
Do you remember how you found out that Japan had surrendered?
Well, actually, by that time, I was back in San Francisco. The last patrol that we had, and with the boat, was damaged so badly, and the 189 attempts, we went back to Pearl Harbor, and they inspected the Sturgeon and decided that she would not fit for another patrol.
So this was your last patrol, and you made mention of this. There were 189 attempts to sink you, whether from the air or from ships at sea. And you didn't notice at the time, but so then you get back into Pearl Harbor, they examine the ship and are basically saying, how'd you guys make it back?
Yeah, we don't get that conversation from anybody, but that's what it was. And so they stripped the Sturgeon down to a skeleton crew. Quite a few of us went then on sub base at Pearl Harbor, and the Sturgeon went back to the States. I was at sub base at Pearl Harbor for about 6 months, until I got signed to shore duty in Treasure Island first, and then up at the General Court Martial Brig up on YBI. So I was actually on shore duty in San Francisco area when Japan surrendered.
Well, I would imagine being in San Francisco on that day was probably a pretty interesting place to be. And here you are in San Francisco again today. Was there a little celebration in San Francisco with that news?
Oh, yes. In fact, my wife and I were downtown on Market Street to get a blood draw for we were going to get married. And that was the day that Japan surrendered. And of course, you know what San Francisco was like that day. It was just a madhouse. And so they closed up on us, so we had to go back at a later date. So we just went back to her folks house and spent the rest of the day. So yeah, but Market Street was crazy when it finally was declared the war was over.
And did that give you a sense of satisfaction or pride, knowing that you'd been a part of this really worldwide effort?
I don't know. I don't feel like I don't remember celebrating. I was pleased. I was glad that it was over with.
When I'm bouncing around a little bit here, but when you got to that sub base at Pearl Harbor and you heard that news about the ship being too damaged to go back out for another war patrol, did that get your attention at all? Did that make you feel fortunate to have come through it so cleanly?
You know, I really don't remember the feelings.
Let me approach that a different way then. How many kids and grandkids and great-grandkids you have?
I have 3 great-grandkids living in the same town that I do in Modesto, and I have 7 grandkids now living in Southern California.
You've got 3 generations after you of your family that wouldn't be here if the Japanese had been a little more successful in trying to sink your submarine. Does that make you feel like someone was looking out for you or you were fortunate?
Oh, yes, I am. I feel very fortunate, and I think we had some good skippers that took good care of us and good crews, and yeah, I think we were fortunate for us to get through considering the mighty boats that were lost.
Yeah, and when you think about that, when you walk up to the Pampanito here and you see the memorial to the 52 submarines that sank during World War II, what kind of emotions does that bring up in you? What does that make you think?
Well, it makes me feel, you know, sad about all of the guys that were lost. But, of course, at each meeting, we told the boats for the boats that were lost for that particular month. And the major meetings, we told the boats for all of the boats that were lost, including the boats then that were lost prior to the war and after the war. So the tolling of the boats is a very solemn thing for all the submarine sailors.
Do you ever look at that and think, you know, that could have been me?
Oh, not consciously, I don't think I do, but probably subconscious. Yeah, I think, yeah, that's very fortunate that I survived.
What do you get out of spending time with other submariners, whether they're your age or from the Cold War, Vietnam era? What do you get out of those interactions?
Just the camaraderie of being together and being through the same kinds of things and knowing that we're each one that we're, you know, in war years, we're very fortunate to return back. I guess it's a bond that's kind of forged during that time that just never ends.
When you think back on World War II, other than simply surviving it, what are you most proud of? What are you most thankful for?
Well, I'm most proud of, and I think about it as the way that the United States responded, not just servicemen, but individuals that were left at home and how they ever jumped in and just did everything that could possibly be done and things that just went on. And it was a United States-wide effort that made us respond to the things that we did and the way we responded to come out at the end of the war. So that's the United States that we have, it, you know, that has there today.
Well, I just want to say thank you for serving our country and thank you for telling me a little bit about it. Is there anything else that I didn't ask you about you think we ought to know?
I can't think of anything. Thank you. I appreciate your talking to me.
As always, the pleasure is all mine. That's Hal Molnix of Modesto, California. You can see what he looks like by following Hometown Heroes Radio on Facebook. And we're not done yet. From a submersible boat to a hastily built Liberty ship that is still fully functional, we'll learn about some more World War II history you can go touch and feel in San Francisco right after this.